accession number 22688, real one.
Right, so we'll start, and this is Enid Grant, and it's real one. So if I could ask you first of all, Enid, we'd be so interested to know something about your family background. Could you tell me whereabouts you were born and the sort of family you came from?
My mother was a doctor, and my father was conservator of forests. During World War One, he was sent to Siam to look after the teak forests. In those days, we used teak to build our battleships, and we rented large tracts of teak forests from the King of Siam. And my father had an apartment in the Imperial Palace. It's now called Thailand. In those days, it was Siam. And he and the king used to go riding together, and on one occasion the king's horse ran away with him, and my father was instrumental in saving him, for which he was awarded the Order of the White Elephant. It's a very interesting little medal. Well, when I don't know where he met my mother, but they met round about that time and got married. And when he married, he had to move out of the Imperial Palace, so he moved back over the border into forest officers' quarters in Moulmein, which is in Burma, just over the border. And I was born in Moulmein. We lived out there for some time, and my father used to go riding into the forest. He used to go on elephants with the Mahouts and the whole load of people, you know, that look after the forest. He had to go and mark the trees that had to be cut, and he developed, unfortunately, Blackwater fever, and he was very ill. His men carried him home from back to the house, and he went and saw the doctor, who said, "My poor fellow, I don't think you'll survive." But however, my father survived to the age of 74. He was never robust, but he did recover. So he retired early from the Forest Service, rather young, and he and my mother went to live in the Southern Shan States of Burma. My mother was a doctor. She'd ceased practicing when she married, but she was always available if anybody needed help. And Kalor they went to in the Southern Shan States, where my father built a house, and I lived there with them for, I think it was age of 3 and a half, my mother brought me back to England. She had 4 brothers here who'd all been officers in World War One. Left father behind. She came to visit her brothers, and I had my tonsils out at Great Ormond Street, and I behaved rather badly in Harrods, so I was put in a nursery boarding school in Bath for the rest of her visit. I wanted a pair of patent leather shoes, and she wanted me to have walking shoes, and there was a scene. Anyway, as I told you, I had my tonsils out at Great Ormond Street, and well, we went back again to Burma. In those days, one travelled by sea, which was very pleasant.
That must have been quite a long journey. Was it by sea in those days?
Yes.
How long would it have taken? Do you have any
British
idea?
British India Line and the, I've forgotten what they're all called now, it's so long ago, British BI, I think we used to travel. Yes, you went down through the Red Sea, Aden, past Aden, and round India, you know, and to Burma. To Rangoon was a big port in Burma.
That must have been very exciting for a young child,
was it? Was.
The journeys.
Yes, and being an only child, I used to get, well, I suppose, rather spoilt in a way. There were always kind uncles about who gave you presents. And, just trying to think what I did then. I stayed at home. Kalor in the Shan States was full of very interesting people. We had a lot of Americans retired there, artists, those sort of people, you know, and they were all... My father used to build houses as a hobby, and he was an artist, he used to paint. So they were all very happy, and there was a club in Kalor, which, like all clubs abroad, you got all the English papers, Queen and the Tatler, and we'd all used, everybody used to go up there and read all these papers, and the men played billiards, and there were tennis courts, and the children had a playground, and it was a very happy sort of life.
Did you mix at all with the Burmese people in the Shan state?
The Burmese people?
Yes.
Oh, yes. They worked for us as servants, as cooks, and but we also had a lot of Indian people who worked for you. And the cooks from Madras in India were always considered the best cooks. But we also had Gurkhas. The Gurkhas did the gardens mainly. They liked to work as Malis, and the women would come in and work in the house. And I had a Gurkha nanny for years. She was a wonderful old lady. Her name was Kanchi, which means scissors. She wore a voluminous black skirt and a black blouse, and she had a necklace of rupees, Indian rupees, around her. And her hair was plaited, mixed with red wool. She was a lovely old lady. I had her for years, and when I was too old, she went in the house and helped my mother with various things. She used to walk me to school. There was an Italian convent. I started off there when I was about seven, I think. I went there for quite some time, until I was nine, I think. And she used to walk me to school and back. It's a lovely country place, Kalor, pine trees about 4,000 feet above sea level, very pleasant.
Would you be good enough to spell it for me? Just
K-A-L-A-W.
K-A-L-A-W, yes, that's right, thank you.
And there were a lot of people retired there, people after the First World War, sort of retired policemen, generals and brigadiers and... people who'd been in the war. There were very interesting lot of people you met out there. And
it must have been a lovely childhood to have been brought up.
It was wonderful, really, yes. At the same time, people replicated their English homes. They'd built them similarly. My father used to do quite a lot of that. He used to design, and then he had Chinese workmen to do the building. They were very good. It was a very cosmopolitan part of the world.
Yes. Well, were the different ethnic groups, you know, one hears so much of racism today.
Racism.
And I wondered, at that time, in that place, did the ethnic groups get on well together?
Oh,
you know,
yes,
were relationships good?
Yes, indeed. Everybody had their own way of life. They didn't want to change it. And they all met in their various different positions, and everybody got on very well. I mean, this racism has all been started by politicians. It didn't happen in Kenya until the politicians started. Everybody got on well in Kenya, where I lived for many years later. The cooks were cooks, and well, as they are in England, and they didn't expect to do anything else. They all had their own little houses, and they came to work, and they were all very happy and gay. And the Burmese were very happy-go-lucky people. They laugh a lot, and they used to disappear now and again. They'd have what they called a pui, which was a sort of celebration, and you'd go down to breakfast, and all your staff had gone. They'd come back the next night perfectly happy. They didn't think they'd done anything wrong to get back to work again. But they were those sort of people. They used to dress in very gay colours. My father used to paint them. I've got a little booklet there. I'll give you to show you.
Oh, I would love to see that.
Am I speaking on this at the moment?
Yes, you certainly are, because this is such interesting material, because it's part of our colonial history, yeah. Isn't it?
Well, that's something that's gone now, you see, and I think it's terrible. It's not what people think it was. They try to make out it was bad and that racists didn't get on, but they did get on very well. My mother opened a small surgery in the village of Kalor, just one room in the town, and all the local people used to come to her because those Burmese people there and the Shans, they liked to go to a woman doctor. And she used to see them all down there, and she was frequently called out. She was very good-natured. People in trouble used to come and get her in the night. And I used to wake up in the morning and there was no mother. Father used to get me up and get me off to school.
You left your little school when you were nine.
I left the convent, yes, and my mother brought me back to England again. So we had another trip to England through the Suez Canal, and this time she intended to leave me at school here. And we went around of her brothers and stayed with them for a bit and did the usual things, and then she took me to... Now my memory's playing on... school in Bromley, Stratford House School in Bromley, as a boarder. I think I was nine or ten, and she stayed around in England for a bit to see how I settled down. And after a few months, they only had nine boarders. They catered mainly for locals who were day scholars, but people who came from abroad, there were about nine of us boarders. And they got, they had an epidemic of measles, I think, and all the children were in bed. And I got double pneumonia, unfortunately. I was very ill, and I had private nurses in the school. And when the doctor finally came, he said to my mother, "You must get her out of England for three winters." So my stay at Stratford House School was not very long.
Were you pleased about that, that you were going... You know, that you were leaving a boarding school and
I didn't dislike it. It took a bit of getting used to. I quite enjoyed my time there, I think. We used to go into Bromley to... what was that famous shop where you buy all the fireworks and the funny things, you know? I can't remember it now. Anyway, my mother cabled my father. There were no telephones abroad. You couldn't in those days. And told him the situation. Poor father, she said, "Sell up everything and come home." Poor father did. He sold his house, his pottery and all his things, and he came home. I was too young to appreciate the significance of his sacrifice at that time. So then they decided to go and live in Italy. So we went to Italy to live in San Remo, and I went to school there. There was an English school run by two sisters called the Mrs. Pito. It was called St. George's School. It was housed in the old Queen of Italy's palace. They didn't have a queen anymore, but the house was a lovely place, wonderful grounds and orchards. I went as a day scholar there. Oddly enough, the Mrs. Pito have a brother, and I lived in Chadlington for a time. You know Chadlington, it's not far from here, and Lady Pito was living there, so I used to meet her when I was out walking my dog, and I said, "Did you by any chance have two sisters who ran a school in San Remo?" And it was her husband's, I think they were her husband's sisters, but it was a strange coincidence after all those years. It was a very nice school. They had to take a certain number of French and a certain number of Italian pupils, but it was mainly for the children of ambassadors and...
While you were in Italy, I dare say the time was going on a bit, you know, after you were after all born a year after World War One. Were you there, were you aware of the sort of development of fascism in Italy?
Oh, yes, I'm coming to that. One thing I didn't tell you about in the Shan States was the proximity with the people and the life. Many of the English people married Burmese ladies. I have a friend now, friends whose grandfather lived next door to us, Mr. Aldworth. He was a retired superintendent of police. He married a Burmese lady called Arme. Never mind, I've forgotten her name. He was a splendid old man. They lived next door to us. And there were quite a number of people like that had married to Burmese women who were very nice. I have two friends here now. They're his grandchildren. I still keep in touch with them. You're not recording this, are you? Are you? Oh.
Yes, it's interesting to know that because it, you know, it shows the relationships, as it were.
And but you'd have all these English houses, people, as I say, built houses like their English homes, and they had lovely gardens. And then suddenly you'd come to a hollow little valley and you'd find all the golden pagodas where the Burmese lived, you see. And the elephants. We had lovely golf course there built for the club, and you look out in the morning, you'd see all the elephants walking down the golf course. So it was a sort of mixture of everything.
Sounds absolutely charming.
Yes, it was a lovely place to live in, really. And
but in Italy, you were aware of the development of fascism, weren't you?
Oh, yes, very much so. We lived in... We went Thomas Cook's, of course, in those days. They took you around and they arranged everything for you, and they found a house for us, a hotel to live in first, and then we found the Villa Molina in San Remo. We lived there for quite a time, and then I started going to St. George's School. It was a bit far to get there, so my parents moved to further into the town and got a flat. We lived in the house. It was an old Italian lady owned the house. She was blind, and I used to have to go and sing to her, which she said she enjoyed. I don't know. Anyway, I used to walk to school on my own from there. That was all right. But I forgot what... I think our lease expired and we moved to another flat in the town. And it was getting difficult. If you went in to have coffee in a restaurant, you had to be very careful not to mention Hitler's name. There were people listening, you know, you sort of watched your words. But the Italian people themselves were charming. They were extremely nice. And I can remember one Easter we went in to have a coffee, and there was an Italian couple sitting at a table next door, and the woman came over to my mother and said, "Could we give your little girl an Easter egg?" So my mother said, "Yes, of course you can." They gave me a beautiful Easter egg. They're friendly, kind people.
Did you see these sort of black shirts?
Oh, yes.
Were they sort of very obvious then in San Remo?
Yes, we used to, when the third house we moved to, it had a big garden and olive trees. It was a sort of flat. Didn't have an upstairs, but it was on the road, and we'd wake up 2 a.m. and hear them marching, all these fascists. They used to go marching around, and there was an air of... people weren't entirely happy, you know. And we had some friends called the Lentaris. He was Italian, she was English, and they had a little son called Ben, who was 6. And he had to go every Sunday with all the other boys, wear a black shirt, and they used to have wooden guns, and they were made to march in the square. Every Sunday they had this practice. And things were getting... you could sort of feel that everything wasn't right, and I think my parents were rather keen to move on, so I think we were there.
How about Mussolini? Was he much in evidence at that time?
No, we didn't actually see him, but I said Hitler. I meant Mussolini. Did I say Hitler? It was Mussolini, of course. No, you never saw him, but it was he. This was all being done on his behalf. These marching people and the little boys having to parade and all the rest of it. Well, there was a very big English colony there, you know. We had a... And then the American ambassador, his son was my best friend, Dudley, and you had tennis coach from England, and his daughter was one of my friends. You had a large English population living in San Remo. We used to go down to the beach and used to meet all the people down there. One day my father and mother, they met, there was a clairvoyant on the beach and she talked to them and they said, well, can you tell us what's going to happen? She said, yes, she said, you're going to leave San Remo and you're going to a very hot country. So we did leave after a while. But life there was very pleasant on the whole, apart from all this. We used to go up into the mountains in the summer and go round, see all the sights and everything.
When did you leave? What date would it have been when you did leave Italy?
I was 12, I would say 12, when we left. That would make it what?
If you were born in 1919, that would be, you would have been 22, wouldn't it? 1932.
32.
Yes.
Yes, that would be about right.
And did you go to a hot country?
We did. We went to Malta. My father had friends all over the place. He had friends in Malta. And they were going to England for a holiday and they asked him if he'd care to come and live in their house while they were away. So that's where we went. That's where we started off anyway. And then when they came back, we moved to a sort of house in the little narrow street in Malta. It was a typical place where the goats used to wander down the street. And in the summer, the goats used to wear hats. And we lived there. Then I went to school. It was a question of finding me a school, and they found Miss Yabsley's academy for young ladies. No, for the daughters of naval officers. Well, I was a daughter of a forest officer, but they took me in. I was there for a while, and I wasn't happy. It was very small, very cramped, and having enjoyed the wide open spaces in San Remo, so I... My mother moved me to the Catholic convent in Slema. I used to go to... And then we also moved to a different flat to live in St. Andrew's Bay, which was very nice.
Would you have been there on the outbreak of war in Malta, or had you moved on to yet another place?
I had an invitation from another sister in Kenya, who had a farm at the foot of Mount Kenya. So we all went to Kenya and stayed there for some time. And I went to school in Nairobi. And then he had another sister in India, who was married in India, and we went to India and stayed there with her. Not with her, but there, and we were there for quite a time. And then my father looks at my mother at breakfast one morning. He said, you know, I would love to go back to the Shan States. And she said, why not? So we packed up and back we went. Now that was, when was that? I was then 15, I think, 15, about 16, 15.
That would have been 34, wouldn't
yes, that's
it? 1934.
About 33, 34, something like that. Then we... there were two American ladies who'd started a school in Kalor then called Kingswood School. So I went to Kingswood School and again we still had the Gurkha lady, she used to walk with me if necessary. I used to go on my own quite a bit, 3 miles there and back.
Was life much the same as when you had left it? Did you find in Burma?
My father bought another plot of ground, built another house, which is typical of him, started up all his painting again, and we were friendly with the Italian nuns. They used to come and walk round, and everybody was very friendly, a lot of retired people.
When you were sort of growing up and into your sort of later teens, what did you expect to do when you left school? Did you expect to get a job? You know, somebody from your background?
No, I didn't think about it much at the time. I did, while I was at school in San Remo, the Mrs. Peter had a grand piano in the sitting room. We all used to have to go and lie down on the floor for get our backs straight after lunch, and they used to read to us. They had on the grand piano a picture of a third sister, and she was in police uniform. She was one of the first metropolitan women policemen, and I was very impressed with her, and that is what I wanted to do. My mother was not amused. But when I went back to the Champs States, I went to this school run by these two American ladies. It was a big school. They also had to take some of the locals, the Burmese and the Indians, so I had a very cosmopolitan upbringing.
I wondered what your circumstances were when the war came, you know, 1939.
Yeah, I'm just coming
to that.
Yes, you
would have been then about 20, wouldn't you, 1939? What were you doing in your...
1920... When I joined the army, it was 1942, because the Japanese had infiltrated Burma. But in between that, my mother, being a doctor, she was very anxious that I should take up nursing.
When did you take up nursing?
My father was very much against the idea, and they battled for about a year, but eventually mother won, and I went to the Rangoon General Hospital, where I trained.
You were then 17, I believe,
yes, 17.
How did you feel about that, you know, being taking up nursing? Was it something you wanted to do?
Not particularly, but in those days there wasn't an awful lot for girls to do. They either became typists or nannies or something like that. I don't think I really wanted to do it, but apparently I was very good at it, I was told later on. I think largely because of my mother. I'd grown up with a caring person, and she'd always taught me to look after people and do what I could for them. It was a very interesting training, because it was a multiracial hospital. It was a very fine hospital. It was based on St. Thomas's, and all the staff, sisters and matrons, all came out from the big London hospitals. But we had a Burmese medical superintendent, and they trained Burmese girls as well, and Indian girls. It was all multiracial. We had Chinese, Japanese surgeons. But it was a very good training, because you got all the tropical diseases as well you had to look after, in addition to everything else. So I was there for 3 years. I passed my exams. And you don't want the details. There isn't time, is there? Then I went home. It was Rangoon, 300 miles from the Shan States. It's a long journey for a bit, and the question was what to do next, and everybody said you should do your midwifery training. And there were one or two girls from the hospital were going to Madras, that's southern India, where there's a big maternity hospital called the Egmore Hospital, also very well known in those days. And so I was there for 6 months and did my, what in England was called Part One, midwifery.
Could I just check the name of the hospital, Enid?
The Rangoon General Hospital.
No, the midwifery one.
Egmore. E-G-M-O-R-E, I think it was the Egmore, I hope I'm right, maternity hospital. Yes. Again, it took all races, as every hospital did.
You were getting a very thorough training, weren't you?
Getting what?
A very thorough training, it
yes,
seems.
Very thorough.
Yes, and as you say, not only with the sort of Western diseases, but tropical diseases as well. We see a lot of tropical diseases.
Yes. You've got,
what were the main ones at that time?
What, the diseases?
In the tropical diseases,
Malaria. We used to get, phobia, when you're bitten by dogs.
Rabies.
Rabies, we had patients, rabies, and we had TBs and all those sort of things, meningitis. We had big a section of infectious diseases. They had special little houses in which they nursed them.
And would it have been the case that, you know, poorer people would have been treated? You know, were all people treated?
Everybody, anybody. I mean, many of my patients were just brought off the street. They had nothing except the clothes they stood up in. And I remember one boy who...